better offices.
You know what I like about this?
I'd like to call the Senate Committee on Health Care to order. Good morning, everyone. It is Tuesday, February 16th. I want to let you know that Thursday will be the last day that we will be able to move any bills out. I don't plan to work session any bills today, so all of them are going to be moved over to Thursday. I wanted to let you know that. And then I'm going to hear 3631 last. So with that, I would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 3632. And I'd like to call Jonathan Eames forward.
Can we do a quick review of it?
Yes, please do a quick review.
Thank you, Chair. House Bill 3632, current version doesn't have a revenue, has a minimal fiscal on it. It does require the Oregon Health Authority to study the viability of implementing a pay-or-play system of employer-based insurance in Oregon. Basically, employers would be required to pay into a for coverage if they didn't already provide it. And so I will end there. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jonathan Eames. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Building Trades, as well as the National Electrical Contractors Association, as well as a number of third-party administrators in the state. So, flashback to 2009, and I sat before your committee, and we had a robust discussion about a number of things about how to pay for health care. And, you know, we talked about the shared responsibility and looking at different options on how we would pay for health care. And I promised during that committee hearing that I would bring forward to you some different options as far as what we could look at and what some different options are. This is the product of that. As we move forward to 2011 and we look at the federal one-time dollars that came in to the state going away, and we look at trying to provide health care for our neediest citizens, we want a number of different options on the table for you to consider. And rather than bringing forward a plan detailed that hasn't been worked out or vetted with other interest groups, we thought it best that we would ask you to have the Oregon Health Authority look at this this option, which is a pay-or-play model, or what's commonly referred to as a pay-or-play model. And rather than getting into the real details of this specific, you know, and what could be complicated approach to funding health care, we thought it would be more appropriate and better for you to have another third-party body look at this and then bring you back recommendations and the looking at the viability of this kind of option for paying for health care. So, Representative Witt is the sponsor, and he normally takes precedent, but I just wanted to make sure that you understood what we were trying to do. Is we were really trying to have a thoughtful discussion around this issue, and that's why we're bringing this forward to you today.
Thank you.
You bet.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. State Representative Brad Witt from House District 31. Appearing before you in support of House Bill 3632. This bill calls upon the Oregon Health Authority to conduct a study about the viability of implementing a fee for employers which would be the equivalent of buying health insurance for their employees as well as their uninsured dependents. It would also, the study would also investigate the option of excluding that fee based on the level of insurance that the employer might offer, and requires that a study be made back to the legislative body by the end of this year, reporting on the options and feasibility of this pay-or-play system. Of course, this is targeted at looking at one of the major cost inflators in health insurance costs, which is cost shifting, and we're hopeful that That study may offer us some options of ways that we could possibly go to lower health insurance costs in this state for the uninsured. Thank you very much.
Have you talked with the health authority about this bill?
Yes, and I believe they testified in the last committee hearing in favor, and I think, yes, Janine Smith is here as well. So you probably want to have them come up as well.
Thank you. Questions? All right. Dr. Smith?
No.
Senator Mona Sanderson, members of the committee, Janine Smith, out of breath. My apologies for being a little late. We at the Health Authority are very familiar with this concept of the payer play. We've looked at it extensively during both the Health Policy Commission work and the Health Fund Board work, and felt that this would not add any additional fiscal to our activities because it would be part of the comprehensive plan that we are to be completing to send back to you by the end of the year. And so we felt that this just kind of adds some clarity to the work overall to make sure that we include the viability of a pay-or-play system into that report and give you some policy options and recommendations if deemed viable.
Andrew Morris?
Madam Chair, is this bill necessary?
Senator Mona Sanderson and Senator Morris, I think that it just adds some clarity to the direction you've given us in House Bill 2009 to provide you information about a health insurance exchange. Massachusetts uses this as a means to inspire folks to participate either through giving insurance to their own employees or help fund the cost of supporting those who don't have insurance. So it really just adds some clarity. I think we could go either way, but I think that it doesn't necessarily create additional work or burden to us.
Follow up, Madam Chair. There are other considerations in terms of broad-based funding mechanisms that need to be evaluated as well. And my concern is that this seems to be narrowly focused to one method that may or may not be the most viable and preferred.
Chair Mona Sanderson, Senator Morris, I think it is one of several options to consider in terms of ongoing sustainability of expanding coverage. I think it doesn't preclude us by having this bill to just focus on this and not look at other options. I mean, we wouldn't be doing due diligence if we didn't look at all the available options. It just gives some clarity that you would want to have us make sure we look at this particular option.
The relating clause is very narrow, Madam Chair. I would suggest, if possible, that an amendment be offered that would make it clear that there would be other alternatives that would be explored, as opposed to just one. But I, looking at the relating clause, it may not be possible.
I think you're correct. We have had a presentation to us regarding an entirely different kind of way of funding health care, and many of us have been a part of that process for over a year, and wanted, and I think that's the point that...
Yes, thank you.
...that we would like to share, that this may be one, but there are many others out there, at least that this committee would like to also be considered. Yes, Senator Bates.
No, Madam Chair, just real quickly, and Representative Witt, thank you for bringing this forward. Having said that, I will vote for it, but I want to make it clear that the Health Authority was set up to deal with these kind of issues and to bring some clarity to this, and I appreciate this is one option they should be looking at I could write a bill with 10 different options, including a sales tax to support general funds to bring general fund money or money into a broader program. We've had actually at one point a pay-or-play system on as Oregon law. It never went into effect. It was rescinded before it became law. It's part of the original Oregon Health Plan. There's all kinds of issues here with ERISA, and there's big health care cost drivers separate from this. In fact, if you solve those, this would not be as big a problem for cost shift. So having said that, I'll still support it because it does give some clarity and some drive and helps push the authority a little further along. But I want to be very clear that a pay-or-pay system may or may not be the right answer here. I am not wedded to an employer-based health care system. And I think ultimately we're going to have to move away from that or we'll never get there. And there's ramifications when you ask you to do this. How does that affect Oregon business compared to competing with Washington, California, and Idaho and Nevada? The program in Massachusetts is failing. It's not working. And so bringing this forward, great, good discussion, drives us in the right direction, and I will support it. But I don't want people thinking this is the end-all, be-all. So it's a step, just one small step in the right direction.
And Madam Chair, Senator Bates, I just want to underscore that this would be a study that would be evaluating options and reporting on those options. And this is merely one option among a plethora of approaches to this problem. Excuse me. And Senator Bates, I think you are spot on in terms of if we were to develop a health insurance program today, I think there are very few of us, and I say this as a labor leader, who would design a system that's employer-based. But as long as this is the system that whose rules we play under at this point, it is an investigation of how we can potentially ameliorate some of the problems that we're facing currently.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand the intent of this. I guess I'm not sure that passing this is the right thing to do, and the reason for that is we gave the authority the task of exploring these options and to report back to us, and I would dare say that by next January the authority will probably not have solved all the problems in the healthcare system. And my fear is if we pass this legislation that's specifically directing them in one of the various options, it doesn't, it kind of, we're saying we like this, look at this more than the others, and I'm not willing to go there. We gave the authority the ability to have in their own judgment the directions they wanted to look at and how deep they wanted to go in certain areas. And I'm not at this point necessarily willing to second guess what the authority's doing on the front end of what they're doing. Well, understanding that this clearly is something that needs to be explored, I just don't think that this should rise above the other options that are potentially on the table.
Senator Morissette.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think legislative oversight is all about second-guessing and keeping on top of what we think is important to look at. This is directing you to take a look at something and come back and tell us what your opinion is. I don't want it shoved aside and put under the rug and, this isn't really what we want to do. No, I want information about this program. And we will be expecting it.
Okay. Senator Morris, did you have any other
comments? Well, I think the charge is sufficiently clear to the health authority to do this in the context of evaluating other options as well. I'm very concerned that this be escalated to a December 2010. I think it's virtually impossible for the board to do that in looking at this in as it relates to other options as well. It's very complex, and I think we need to be very circumspect about evaluating this and making sure that the recommendations that do come out of that board are in fact the best. And so I this is one option. I just hate to see something channeled by virtue of the legislative action here.
Senator Bates?
No, Madam Chair, I would like to ask Dr. Smith a question. Were you here when Mr. DiLorenzo presented his plan? I think you probably were.
Chair Melissa Anderson, Senator Bates, I was at my desk and I was watching
okay.
while working.
Okay. What are we doing crazy down here? I would like to ask that and get it on the record that that plan be looked at just as carefully as this plan would be. I think it's an interesting plan and potentially has the ability to really fix a huge problem for us. Even more drastically than this does, and Representative Witt, I think you'd probably be accepting of it. Also, we actually got some legs under it, but we need a lot of work done on that to really know that the details would allow that plan to work before we could start the political process of having the ability to climb what I consider Mount Everest to get that plan in place. But you know, Mount Everest was actually climbed a few times. We actually got there. We can do this too. But I would ask that we get on the record that you're committed to looking at that plan just as carefully as you're looking at this plan.
Chair Melissa Anderson, Senator Bates, yes, we'll definitely make sure that that's included in our approaches to give you back some recommendations.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm excited about finding a sustainable system for the state of Oregon, and I know that we can do that. And I'm glad that this issue is on the table, as well as many others. All right. Any other questions? With that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3632 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3665. And Nikki, yes. Terzia. And does Betsy want to come up and Elise?
Yeah, no, they're yeah.
I know you're the opposition. Yeah, okay. You are surrounded, Nikki.
I'll take both of them. Good morning, and thank you, Chair Monis Anderson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nikki Terzieff, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Dental Association. And HB 3665 was requested by the Oregon Dental Association, drafted by Representative Mike Schaffler from Happy Valley, and became a House Healthcare Committee bill just on February 1. It passed out of the House Committee unanimously with no opposition. It passed off the House floor unanimously with no opposition. And to this point, I did not know of any opposition. So I will just dive in. I've visited with most of you and personally and staff in one instance about this bill. And this is a bill that will very simply, very straightforwardly, ban dental insurers from offering non-covered services as a part of their contracts. So we've seen a kind of national trend that is going to be reaching out here to Oregon soon. And it is where, it is where insurance companies are dictating the fee schedules for our providers as part of their stipulation for part of being their PPO. Very simple, Madam Chair.
Questions? Let's get the full picture in. Could you stay, Nikki?
Sure.
Yeah.
I'll jump in. Good morning, Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee. Elise Brown here today representing America's Health Insurance Plan, AHIP. And I'm here, I guess, first of all, to apologize. We did watch this bill go through the House committee, and Nikki's right. There wasn't any opposition, and I guess that's why I'm here today. Certainly representing health plans, but even more so representing our consumers, because we feel that this is an anti-consumer bill. Bottom line, this does not hurt the insurance companies at all. It's not going to change the way that we interact with our contractual agreements with our providers. It's really going to hurt the patients. And so I just wanted to make sure that we slow the process down and understand really who's going to pay at the end of the day on this. And it's the consumers. You didn't hear from them before, so I'm here to help make that point today. Thank you.
Could you cite an example of what specifically would not be covered that is covered now?
That's not it.
I'm not sure that that's really what the bill's about.
Or Nikki, can you explain what, give a specific on a non-dental service?
A non-covered service might be anything that's above your allowance, above your benefit. If you have a benefit of $1,500 and need one more filling, it might be anything that's above that. That would be forced to come out of pocket, Chairman Monis Anderson. And if I might, we're concerned that this is just a cost-shifting structure. I think there's one point we might agree on. It might be that the consumer could be hurt by this. We want to protect that. Our dentists do a lot of charity work. Our folks do a lot of attention to detail when it comes to their billing practices. Trying to be able to negotiate for those who cannot pay their bills in full, we can cut rates. Trying to negotiate payment plans for people, the passage of this bill will allow our dentists to be able to continue those practices, to be able to make those allowance for those who are economically disadvantaged. When you start looking at who else might suffer, the dentist themselves might suffer. They might have to take a hit off of their bottom line. They might have a rural community that closes down on a Wednesday now, and now you get into an access question. I would say the one entity that may not suffer would be the insurance company that gets to reach out to additional consumers by offering this fantastic discount plan.
Yes, Senator Bates.
Nikki, let me ask a question if I could. Two questions, really.
Yes.
This is a question for Senator Cruz and myself. This has nothing to do with dental ownership, right?
No.
Thank you. Okay. I want to get that off the table. For those of you who have been around this process a little while, you'll know what it's like to be at a 58-2 vote. Okay? Just want to get that clear right from the beginning. The key to this bill for me, I want to make sure I understand it properly, is this. When a provider, be that a physician or a dentist or anybody else providing a service, enters into an agreement with an insurance company, it's really over what the benefit package is, what they're going to get paid for doing those services. And there's always pushes and shoves how that packages is set up and who's speaking for who has the power in the negotiations, and all those things happen, but they somehow manage to happen. As I understand this particular issue, dentists would be in a situation in which they've agreed to a package, but in addition there's a part of the package they haven't agreed to, and that's this discount plan that is offered to patients under that insurance package, and they haven't had an opportunity to directly say, yes, I agree with that discount for services that are not covered in the benefit package, or for if there's a cap on the cost of the dental work done that year, that there's been no discussion with them about this discount that would be offered by the insurer to the patient, but they've not had an opportunity to go in and honestly negotiate that issue. Is that correct?
Chairman Anderson, Senator Bates, yes. This is why this law came forward, so that we had the opportunity to say, no, you cannot offer us non-covered services. You cannot offer us the equivalent of other duties as assigned.
And just to make sure that everyone agrees, I want to hear from other people on the panel. Is that your understanding of the situation, that the dentists have signed on to an insurance plan, but they never actually signed on to a discount for services that were outside of the cap for services that or for a benefit that was not part of the plan that they signed up for? Is that true or not true?
Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Bates, I think the way we look at this is that it's an interference between the contractual relationship between the insurer and the dentist. I think the remedy for that is if the dentist is not comfortable with that arrangement, they don't have to sign the contract.
Madam Chair,
I didn't get an
you didn't answer my question. I don't think, maybe I didn't state it properly. Let's take Delta as an example. Have they sat down with the Dentist Association, who I assume does it? Let me ask another question. I assume the Dental Association does the contracting for the dentists of the state, or some types of association does. They don't. Each individual dentist doesn't try to contract with Delta, do they?
Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Bates, because of antitrust laws, each individual dentist must make their own contracts. We as the association only have the recourse of advocacy and governance and policy.
Follow-up question, Madam Chair?
Yes, please.
Each individual dentist office has to do this. Not as a group, not as a dental group. Each individual dentist office does.
Chairman Sanderson, Senator Bates, it's my understanding that because of collusion laws, the association would not be able to bargain or bargain collectively a group of dentists.
Madam Chair, follow-up again. Are there PPOs involved in this? For provider organizations where a panel of dentists sign up and some do and some don't, as they are in medicine?
Chairman Sanderson, Senator Bates, I don't know.
And the reason I'm asking is it doesn't seem to be a very fair level for negotiations. If a large insurance company comes in, I mean, most insurance is for dental practices. There's two or three or four maybe in the state. They're interstate usually. And if each individual dentist has to negotiate something, there's going to be a lot of splicing and dicing going on here that would be difficult for dentists. And I can't imagine each dentist sitting down going through a 12-page thing, looking at benefits and trying to figure this thing out. I mean, I don't quite get how it works. In our business, our side of it, we have groups that do it, and we rarely individually read those. Our IPAs or our PPOs sit down and negotiate, and there's a lot of pushing and shoving that goes on, but in the end, something works out. Is that the way dentists do it, is individually?
Chairman Sanderson, Senator Bates, as far as I understand, yes.
Senator Cruz.
Yeah, question for Senator Bates.
This has nothing to do with dental ownership, although we may be getting close here. I'm a little worried.
My question is, I'm just trying to understand the lay of the land here. So your PPO does the negotiation. Is part of that negotiation, is that included discounts for non-covered services or not, or do you know? Because that's kind of the issue here.
Yeah, it's an IP. In our situation, it was about 150 doctors, and it may be more like 200. We have an executive director and a couple of people who understand insurance contracts very well. They negotiate the benefit package and what we're going to be paid on that benefit package, and some of it's discounted. But it's negotiated as a group. Not if each of us, there's probably, of 150 of us, there's probably 30 or 40 groups of doctors in that, and if each one of us had to sit down and negotiate, we'd go crazy, especially when there's specialists in primary care and everything. We would spend most of our time talking to insurance companies. That's just one company. So I don't quite understand how it works on the dental side, but my guess is that it's a little simpler maybe, but still, it seems like an unfair playing field here with a couple of large insurance companies having the ability to pick off individual dentists, if I'm understanding this properly, and maybe I'm not understanding it properly.
Well, Madam Chair, if I could, I'm assuming an entity like Willamette could negotiate for all of their dentists, and I'm assuming that dentists in a region could probably organize themselves for the purpose of contracting if they chose to. Is that correct? I'm not quite sure how big you have to get before you're in violation of antitrust laws, because obviously the docs can do it in regional bases. And this is getting confusing, Madam Chair.
I know.
Yes,
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm kind of a visual learner, so if you think about procedures, could you give an example of how this would play out for a patient that goes in? There are covered services, and there are services that are not covered that are still required. How would this bill affect the patient and the physician? For example, gold crowns. You know, I suspect there's a cap on the amount of, if they're covered at all. What happens for those extra services that are provided with this bill?
Thank you, Chairman Sanderson, Senator Morris. Those, let's assume one crown reaches your maximum benefit, and maybe your maximum benefit was $1,200, and anything that needs to be done, prep work or follow-up work after that, would need to come out of pocket for you. If you are a consumer of this particular discount plan, chances are, frankly, it would not affect you at all. It would come down to affecting the provider. It would affect the practitioner. The practitioner now would have to find a place to make up that that discount. Those dollars don't dissipate. It costs the same to deliver services regardless of what discount comes along with it for a consumer. More likely, it would affect the patient in the chair next to them who perhaps is not a member of this same insurance plan or is uninsured completely.
I still want to have some clarification, and maybe this example will help. My daughter had to have braces. My dental plan only covered a certain amount, and I cannot remember that amount. It was like $1,500, and then after that, I had to pay everything out of pocket. So would this state that because my insurance wasn't with the dentist. This is where I'm confused, because I had to pay out of pocket for the braces. My dentist took my personal insurance, which wasn't an individual plan that they had. So I guess I need clarification regarding having a dentist having a contract when usually they just take contracts from other insurers. So would this then affect the contract that I had with my employer? It is, right? I'm not sure I'm explaining myself really very well.
Do you understand?
I think I just got it.
Yes.
Maybe
help,
I'm wrong. Let me ask a question here. I'm a little slow. Nikki, this is a question for you first, and then chime in. Insurance company goes to a company like mine and says, we are competing for your dental work. Okay. I'm talking about my company buying dental insurance for my employees. And we've negotiated a contract with the dentist in your area, which has a benefit package in it. And that benefit package will be paid at a certain level, and the dentist will agree to it. In addition, there's going to be things outside of that benefit package, which we're going to cap the expenses on. And we will sell you that program as a benefit to you and your employees, so the dentist cannot charge anything more than a certain amount in these non-covered benefits. And the next insurance company comes along and says, if there is another one, and says, we've got the same benefit package, but we're not going to cap what dentists through a discount program are going to ask you to pay for non-covered services. And that's the difference between these two situations, I believe. And so as a provider, I think, that doesn't sound very good to me. If I were in the position the dentist are in, I'm getting told what I can charge or not charge for services the insurance company isn't even covering as part of the benefit package. As an employer, buying insurance for my employees sounds like a pretty good deal. Okay? So I think that's the difference here. And where I come down on it, just so everybody knows, I think that's unfair to dentists. Okay? It may be a good deal for my employees, or me as an employer, to get a little better package out of the insurance company that helps protect my employees, but it's not a good deal for dentists. That should be negotiated with the dentist. Just say, okay, do you accept also that we're going to cap non-covered services? And if that was an agreement, I would go for it, okay? Now, it sounds like they still can do that, but the next question becomes, is it a level playing field? Last time I looked at getting insurance from my employees, there were only two companies available. I'm not sure how many other companies are out there, and they're out-of-state companies. So I'm at this point would be, I'm going to come down the side of the dentist right now on this one. It's a complex situation, and I'm sorry we're doing a special session when we haven't got time to really look at this a little more carefully. That's sort of a kind of a common complaint running through this whole session. But I wish they'd been vetted better on the other side. I think maybe both sides weren't heard, but I think I now understand the push and shove in this. It's on one side, it might be an advantage for employers and employees. On the other, it's a disadvantage to the dentists. And I hope I've got my head straight. Now, does anyone in the panel disagree with what I just said?
Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Bates, I think, again, that if the dentists believe that the contracts keep them now from passing along the deeper discount, then that's the bill that we should be talking about. I guess I would argue that this bill doesn't get there. And again, I would just say, let's remember who is going to pay the difference here. Not the carriers, the insurance buying public.
Okay, Betsy. Ms. Earls.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Betsy Earls representing Associated Oregon Industries. And as I think you've already pretty much covered, employers frequently contract for a medical plan for their employees as well as a dental plan. Sometimes it's part of the same insurance plan. Some of our members also buy a dental plan separately from their medical insurance. Dollars available to employers to purchase health insurance for their employees are more limited than they've ever been. And if there's a place that employers can focus more on preventative care, it's usually a good place to look at their dental plans and look at cleaning and preventative care and other absolutely essential services like that. One of the advantages that they have had is that the insurance company is able to negotiate a discount for their employees on non-covered services. And if this bill passes, our members will not be able to purchase contracts with insurance companies in which the additional services, non-covered services, are discounted. So their employees could be faced with paying higher prices for non-covered services that are very, very important to their dental health.
Okay.
Yes.
Elise, is your concern the cost shift then to...
The cost shift to the patient.
To the patient, who does not have insurance, or
who's paying extra now for services that they won't, that they aren't paying extra now.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I don't believe there's any cost shift here. There's a benefit that's going to be paid for, and there's no cost shift there. The only as we think of cost shift is, does this drive up insurance rates? Well, it doesn't. But what it does do, it isn't going to drive up insurance rates. What it does do is rise up the cost to the individual. And that's different than the cost shift we normally think of in medicine. So I don't want to get those two cost shift things mixed up here. Clearly, it's going to, and without the discount, it is possible, not necessary, but possible, that a patient might pay more money. One patient may pay more, one may pay less. That's something they need to negotiate with the dentist. And that's sort of an open agreement between the dentist and the patient. It goes back to some personal responsibility here, which I know the business world likes personal responsibility. This time they want some protection for their employees. So this is a really complex issue. I'm sounding more and more like Mitch Greenlick, and I don't like that.
We don't either.
Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, thank you. I guess what is confusing to me is the background statement that we have on our staff major summary references a cap on the amount, which implies to me that the provider, the dentist, is being asked to do things and not get paid for them. Would it be more accurate to say that it's not a cap, but it's a discount on non-covered services rather than a cap?
I have no idea.
Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Morris. Yes. The summary statement, I've had some difficulty with the summary statement anyway. It does not read easily for us.
For the follow-up, just so I'm clear, what we're talking about here are services that are provided that still the dentist receives payment for those services, but this bill restricts the ability of the insurance plan to require the same discount on the non-covered services as for the covered services.
This bill, Chairman Anderson, Senator Morris, this bill will restrict the ability of the insurance, dental insurance company, to offer non-covered services as part of the contract.
Offer discounts.
I'm
sorry, to include non-covered services as part of the contract.
Madam Chair. Another question for the insurance industry here on this
one.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, I think so. but what we're talking about is whether it's rack price or whether it's a discounted price for non-covered services. And presently, plans have a requirement that if you do more than what's covered, it'll be at the same discount. Is that what we're saying? I mean, today, and you're asking to change that.
Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Morris, we're asking in this bill to disallow insurance companies to be able to include non-covered services or the other duties as assigned in their contracts at all, regardless of caps or discount or however you would like to.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I see Doug Barber's head going in many different directions. And I think he represents an insurance, the dental, Willamette.
Yes.
And maybe Doug could provide some further confusion or light on the subject.
Can I ask a question again?
Sure.
This is kind of a new policy for insurance companies, I think. Policy is the wrong word. A new method of dealing with dentists, as I get it. This is fairly new. Did insurers, do you think, brought this forward as a way of increasing their market share, going to employers and saying, if you sign with us, we'll negotiate the prices for covered services, but outside of that, we'll also give you this added benefit that we'll put a control or a discount on services not covered and allowed you to offer a competitive advantage over other insurance companies? Was that kind of the thinking? I mean, why did you step into this? There must have been some reason for it. You may not know the answer to that.
That's Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Bates, so you're asking why we're at the table today to make this point?
Why have insurance companies done something different than they have not done 10 years ago or 5 years ago? This appears to be sort of a new phenomenon the last 4 or 5 years. Was this an attempt to have another tool to increase market share, I mean, against your competitors? I mean, it seemed like a logical thing to me that would be what you're saying. We'll negotiate this. Our contracts may look the same with dentists as everybody else's. But we have this added advantage. If you sign with us, your employees will have an ability to have a discount for non-covered services. Was that kind of the genesis behind this, the thinking behind this?
Well, Chair Monis Anderson,
I don't think it's a bad
Senator
thing.
Bates,
I just want to know.
Possibly. I would just say that the whole philosophy around negotiating contracts is to keep prices down. So that's the number one reason you do that. And
I think to keep prices down for the insurance company, not for the general public. That's another discussion we won't go into today. Madam Chair, I've digressed. I'll stop.
No, but you made a good point. There probably the reason that this bill came forward is that there are insurers out there in competition and getting market share providing discounts that say ODS has never done before. I see a nod. Okay. All right.
Doug Barber.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Doug Barber. I guess here on behalf of Willamette Dental, we have not been involved with this bill because it does not directly impact us. We have an HMO-style insurance product. So this really has no direct impact on us. But in consultations with my client, here's the way I understand how it works. That traditional dental insurers often have, a variety of products. One might be full dental care services. The other might be a very restricted product with a $1,500 cap or something like that. In the contracting process, they say to the dentist, we have patients that we're going to send your way that have this reduced benefit package. You know, it's enough to cover fillings and cleanings, but if you need a gold crown, it's not going to cover that. But for those covered lives, we want you to extend the discount that we have negotiated for that crown to all of our patients, whether that's covered in their plan or not covered in their plan. So for the patient, it means, it's $1,000 to pay for the crown, but there's a 10% discount that's negotiated with this insurer. So the patient, instead of paying $1,000 out of pocket, pays $900 out of pocket. So it's a savings to the consumer. That's the way I understand it. It does make, to your last question, Senator Bates, about does this make dental insurance kind of more marketable? I think the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Traditional dental insurance.
And, ours. Madam Chair, companies that don't offer this would be a bit of a disadvantage for those that do. And employers say, oh, I get this as part of the package too. The question then, the next question for me then is, considering that there's not groups of dentists together who can to do this, apparently become what you're saying because of antitrust issues, which I don't understand that because we do it without any antitrust issues. I mean, the antitrust for us is if you harm the public, the ability to negotiate becomes pretty difficult if it's one by one, and it makes a lot more difficult. So.
I think there are large groups that negotiate contracts.
Yeah.
Advantage Dental, for example, is on that model.
Madam Chair, that was my question. How many other large groups? You don't know. It's not the association, though. Okay.
No. Nikki. Chairman Sanderson and committee, and the one company that will be directly affected here in Oregon by this bill becoming law is not in opposition to this bill. We have been working with them at a variety of levels, and they are neutral on this bill.
Which company?
Just by, that would be the ODS companies, just by way of information.
I'm sure I have time to check my private dentist. I want that Novocaine to work next time I'm in his office. I don't want a problem here because I voted the wrong way in this.
I know.
I'm having a hard time with the Oregon legislature steering and directing markets. I don't know. I have to think about this.
I think we all do. All right. We have until Thursday to decide whether we move this bill or not. So,
I will call my dentist.
Is there anyone else that would like to testify on this bill? It's far more complicated than first blush. All right. With that, I would like to close the public hearing on House Bill 3665, and I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 3666. Michael Becker.
I am too. Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee. My name is Mike Becker with Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. Here to testify today in support of House Bill 3666A. This bill was introduced at the request of Regents. I wish I could say I had dreamt up the idea, but it came up in a meeting with one of our salespeople who was talking about he wished he could offer our customers a discount for going green, for going electronic in regard to transactions between us and the customer. And the impediment is the current insurance code, which does not allow such discounts. We would have to file separate products and get those approved as separate products. So we came up with this bill.
Just a question to clarify that. Who do you need to get approval from?
Chair Mona Sanderson, this would have to be through the insurance department. Right. We would have to do a separate filing as a different product. And what this bill does, very simply, is allow a carrier, through that initial filing, to set forth a schedule of discounts off the base price for having gone green, going electronic. And this sets up a situation that encourages three things that I think we should be looking at in all transactions. First of all, administrative simplicity and operational efficiencies at the insurance company. Secondly, promoting sustainable environmental practices to get away from electronic or paper transactions and encouraging electronic transactions. And then finally, encouraging more competition and holding out the promise for some modest but nonetheless meaningful discounts and cost saving that can be passed on to the consumer. The A engrossed amendments that were put in the bill in the House helped clarify the bill in three particulars. Specifically, that electronic transactions are voluntary, both by the purchaser and by the carrier. carrier. This is nothing that is required of carriers, nor is it required of purchasers. If a purchaser wishes to use paper transactions, that is still available. Secondly, it simplifies, the amendments simplify how a carrier goes about getting these discounts approved, and again, that is through a schedule of discounts, transaction discounts that are accompanying the original filing with the insurance department. And then finally, the amendments did some technical cleanup to make the language consistent throughout the bill. I think this is, again, encouraging the right behaviors on all parties. It's a very straightforward bill. It has no opposition that we are aware of, and we would encourage the committee to give it a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Morris. Seth?
Mr. Baker, how will this show up as a savings to the provider? $1.50 per customer?
Chair Monis-Anderson, Senator Morissette, the savings is actually to the purchaser, not to the medical provider.
To the purchaser.
To the purchaser, the individual or the group purchasing. And again, this isn't this is set forth in the schedule of discounts that a carrier could file with the original filing if they so choose. And it would lay out, for example, that if the purchaser were to accept, for example, premium quote and enrollment and electronic EOBs, that the discount would be X percent off the standard pricing.
Okay. And the X percent off would be listed somewhere so they could actually see a savings.
Chair Monis-Anderson, Senator Morissette, that is correct.
Because sometimes these things really sound good, but it's hard to tell if they come through unless they are itemized.
Chair Monis-Anderson, Senator Morissette, again, that is the purpose of the schedule that is filed with the filing and part of what goes through the approval in the insurance department. Now, keep in mind, these are going to be very modest savings because we're talking about that 10% of the premium dollar that is the totality of the insurance company's administration and profits, if you will, which, as we know from the insurance department's report, are typically 1% or less. But again, it is encouraging the right behavior, and it is a step in that direction.
So is this comparable to, say, my auto insurance, where I get a discount? I do get a discount. It is not significant by going wireless on notification of bills, or is this entirely different issue?
Chair Monis.
And payment, actually, too.
Chair Monis-Anderson, I think that's a very good example of the types of discounts that would flow, hopefully, from this type of bill.
Senator Bates.
Yeah, just a couple points real quick. One, I'm kind of surprised it takes a legislative action to make this happen. I don't get that part of it, but obviously it does or it wouldn't be happening. There's another part of this that's actually got some real savings in it, and I'll talk from an employer's point of view again. There might be a little discount on the premium, which would be nice, but it's probably going to be a fraction of 1% or 1%. But the cost of setting these programs up and doing it through paperwork is pretty heavy, and doing it electronically would be a lot simpler and cheaper and more efficient for the employer, I would guess, and make it easier. And that's not captured in that premium. And so when we go to get insurance for our 150 or so employees, it would be nice to be able to do it electronically and not have this paper flowing over the place, which is that thick. And I assume that's what we're looking at. I'm guessing one of your sales reps said, I've had some employers say, hey, can we do this electronically? Why are we doing all this paperwork? It would be so much simpler and faster if we could do it electronically. Mike, is that kind of the basis of this thing?
Chair Monis-Anderson, Senator Bates, that is another facet to the overall picture. It encourages that type of behavior on both sides of the transaction.
It is much more efficient from the employer's point of view, I would guess. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Does the insurance division, I don't think, is here. I know I talked to them about the last bill as well as
this bill. Have you had conversations with the Department of Consumer and Business Services?
Chairman Sanderson, members of the committee, yes, we have on several occasions. In fact, they helped us as we drafted the Dash A amendments that you see in the bill, and they have reviewed those and approved those amendments, correct?
Okay. Is there any further discussion? I mean, this is one that I think I can move forward if you're all amenable. All right. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3666 and open a work session on House Bill 3666.
Senator Cruz.
Okay. We'll be at ease until we get Senator Cruz in here. Dean, the Health Policy Committee, we are in work session, and we have House Bill 3666 in front of us, and no opposition. If Senator Cruz doesn't want to do it.
Madam Chair, could I?
No, I'm fine.
Well, would someone please make
Madam
a motion?
Chair, I would, Madam Chair, if I would be allowed, I would like to move that House Bill 3666A, as amended, be passed out of committee with...
Do we amend
it? Oh, it has not been amended yet, the other side? Madam Chair, I would ask that House Bill 3666 be passed out of this committee to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Is there any discussion? Senator Bates has moved House Bill 366A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. No further discussion. Is there any opposition? So ordered. And Senator Bates, do you want to carry this bill?
Sure, I'd be glad to.
I think Senator Cruz is going to have fun.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. With that, I'd like to close the work session on House Bill 3666A. And I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 3631. And I'd like to ask Representative Suzanne Van Orman to the dais. Or to the, what are you calling
it? This is a
weird witness stand. Witness stand. Come to the witness stand.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Chair Monis Anderson. I am, and committee members, I am Suzanne Van Orman. I am the representative of House District 52, which includes Hood River County, 15 precincts in Clackamas, and 2 precincts in Multnomah County, and we're all wrapped around Mount Hood. House Bill 3631 is brought to you today. Having passed the House by 59-0, and it's an attempt to adjust the statute on discrimination so that we are adding victims of sexual assault. The current law prohibits discrimination against victims of domestic violence, but does not similarly protect victims of sexual assault. This bill would close the gap in protection for vulnerable victims of sexual violence. It would send an important message to survivors that they need not fear to seek treatment for their injuries because it would cost, but in fear that it may cost them future access to health insurance. This bill is a proactive effort to clarify the current law that the protection against discrimination also applies to physical and mental injuries sustained as the result of the violence. It is a measure to protect some of the most vulnerable members of our population, the victims of domestic and sexual violence. I urge your support for the very reason I put this bill forward. There is evidence that some victims lose health care because they now have a pre-existing condition. I will say that it has not occurred in this state. However, this is a proactive move to make sure that it doesn't. So I'm asking your support for this bill. discussion? Yes, Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question, number one, reading the information regarding this, it's almost incredulous that we have 37% of our health care cost. Now, that's a big field that's attributed to sexual violence and those downstream costs associated with it. That's an astounding figure, if in fact that is correct. But my question is that if you have 16 to 18% of rapes are reported, what do you do with that population that is undocumented in the context of the bill that requires that they shall not be a pre-existing condition?
Well, it is hoped that this bill would give them some ease so that they would come forward. I do think this is one. Excuse me. Chair Modis Anderson, Senator Morris. We do worry about those people who have not come forward, and this is an attempt to encourage that. And to support your comments about the incidents, apparently one in six Oregon women experience sexual violence. It is an astounding number.
All right. No further questions. Thank you, Representative Van Orman.
And thank you.
I'd like to call Margie Hoffman and Sybilla Hebb to the thank you. Witness stand.
Chair Monis Anderson, excuse me, members of the committee, Sybil Hebb with the Oregon Law Center this morning here in support of House Bill 3631A. Appreciate your time and attention to this issue and appreciate Representative Van Orman's leadership in bringing this bill forward. I think she did a good job of explaining the concerns and we echo those. I wanted to give you just a little bit of perspective on how this issue has been handled in other states and what sort of the national landscape is. I think about 10 years ago, it became clear through a variety of national studies that discrimination against victims of domestic violence on the basis of the fact that they were victims was widespread through the insurance industry. That's no longer the case today, and we're happy to report that. And part of how that changed was a variety of states, 42 in fact, including Oregon, passing standards and policy priorities in their insurance regulations to indicate that that should not be a reason for discrimination in access to health insurance. And so we appreciate the steps that this legislature has taken in the past to make sure that victims of domestic violence do not suffer a barrier in coming forward to seek health insurance and treatment for their injuries. And we just want to make sure that the same protection is available to sexual violence victims. The dynamic that prohibits many victims from coming forward is similar. There's a great stigma to being a victim of sexual violence. It's uncomfortable and scary to come forward, especially if you're afraid that doing so would result in the denial of future treatment and coverage. And so we don't allege that that's happening now in this state, but there has been national attention brought to this issue in other states, and it's been there have been some stories that have gotten a lot of press that we worry about sending the wrong message to victims in our state, and so stepping forward now to make it clear to people and send a message that they will not be discriminated against on the basis of the fact that they were victims. We think that's an important public health message, and it's an it will have an important impact on victims and their access to coverage. I wanted to just also mention that the passage of this legislation would be in keeping with national models that are endorsed by the Family Abuse Prevention Center, as well as the National Network to End Domestic Violence and the National Insurance Commissioners Association. So this step will be an important step. It's also in keeping with principles that have been widely acknowledged. So I appreciate your attention.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Not to get overly graphic, but what's an example of an abuse that would be denied because of a
Thank you, Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Morissette, and members. The one example that received a lot of attention nationally was the denial to a rape victim who came forward and, as is recommended best practice, sought HIV prophylaxis medication. Okay. And so that triggered the denial.
That's
and the...
That's the example I was thinking of.
Thanks.
Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Not necessarily related to the bill itself. Sybil, were you part of the task force? The Attorney General Sexual Assault Task Force?
Oh, Chair Monis Anderson and Senator Cruz, I am actually a member of the Legislative and Public Policy Subcommittee of the Task Force. I'm not a member of the larger group.
Follow up?
Yes.
Yeah, statistics I find incredibly interesting. It always confuses me when you say about 16 to 18% of rapes are reported, and I try to figure out how you determine the numbers of what's not reported. So if there's any documentation on this, just for my own knowledge is what I'm looking for here. I would like that. And back to Senator Morris's question about the 37% of healthcare costs, if you read further down the line, it includes a whole lot of other things that potentially could be related but potentially could not be related. So, when I see statistical summaries, I tend to be interested in the data that was used to achieve those. So if there's any way you could get me some of that information, it'd be helpful.
Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Cruz would be happy to follow up with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee, my name is Margie Hoffman, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence, and just want to echo the sentiments of Representative Van Orman and also Sybil and ask you to please support this bill because it's very important that we don't see this practice occur in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Any further discussion? Thank you. Colleagues, I'm going to temporarily close the public hearing on House Bill 3631, and there is an amendment, but the witness is not here. I want to reopen House Bill 3665, and I want to get on the record that I need some input from the Insurance Division on the Dental Services Contract Bill. And I know they're not here, but I need to understand a little bit better the complexity of this issue and how this policy change fits in with what the insurance division has. So if you don't mind, I am going to do that. With that, I'll close the public hearing again on House Bill 3665. And could you call Speaker Hunt's...
Her LA is here, so we've got to call her.
Okay.
She's about
10 minutes away.
Let's stand at ease.
Okay, I would like to reconvene the discussion on House Bill 3631. And I do want to read into the record that we received statements from the National Association of Social Workers in testifying in support of House Bill 3631. We also received a statement from the Oregon Medical Association, which also supports House Bill 3631, and we received a statement from the City of Eugene that also supports House Bill 3661. And so with that, there is an amendment before us that did not come, that the House did not pursue. So I would like to have everyone look at the dash A3 amendments, and I'd like to call Tanya Hunt to the stand. And does Lana want to come also?
The dash A3's in here somewhere. They're buried in here somewhere.
Do you have it?
Here is dash A3's. Here we go.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tanya Hunt. I serve as Executive Director of the Children's Center in Oregon City. Our address, is that helpful? Thank you. We are the Child Abuse Assessment Center in Clackamas County. We receive referrals from law enforcement agencies throughout Clackamas County and also the DHS child welfare offices in Clackamas County to provide medical assessments for children who are suspected to be victims of sexual assault or physical assault. Most of the children we see are under the age of 7, and most are suspected victims of sexual assault. Our medical assessments include a full head-to-toe checkup, documentation of injuries, and other concerns of abuse or neglect. This amendment would simply allow us to successfully bill medical insurance for the services we provide. We already do bill medical insurance. It's never a factor. Medical insurance is never a factor in whether or not we see a child. We're responding usually to requests for assessments from, again, law enforcement agencies or DHS. So after the assessment is done, if the child has insurance, which many do not, if they do, though, we will bill medical insurance, and we appreciate the payments we receive. Sometimes insurance companies do deny payment for those services because we are not a primary care provider, because we are not an affiliated provider, because we didn't have prior authorization, because we're not a preferred provider, and many times we have to appeal and appeal and appeal to receive that payment. And sometimes the insurance companies simply deny. When we are denied payment from insurance companies, our only recourse is either to not receive payment for the services or to bill the Crime Victims Compensation Fund, which is a fund out of the Department of Justice, to support these victim services. So there is a cost to the state when insurance companies deny and refuse to pay. This amendment seemed in fitting with the intent of this bill, and I ask for your support in specifying that insurance companies should cover this service and should pay for this service when it is offered through these child abuse assessment centers.
What percentage do you think of the bills that you make are denied?
Eventually, we get paid on probably 90% of our bills. Many of those do require multiple appeals. But there's about 10% where we do ultimately end up being denied, and those are the ones that we either accept that we will not have payment or we turn to the Crime Victims Compensation Fund for payment. And we see about 300 children a year, so it's about 30 kids for us.
Yes. Madam Chair, Tanya, does that fall under pre-existing condition or... There are probably a variety of reasons why a claim is denied. What are some of the reasons?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator. The reasons are various. Sometimes they don't always have a rhyme or a reason. Again, many of the insurance companies, because we are not a primary care provider, prefer that we have a authorization. Mm-hmm. But because much of our work is urgent in nature, or very sensitive in nature, and that most of these accusations or suspected abuse cases involve family members or someone very close to the family, it's not always either timely or appropriate for us to seek pre-authorization from a primary care provider. And sometimes the insurance companies would prefer that we be a preferred provider or have that pre-authorization or be an affiliated provider, and that's why they choose to deny our claims.
Okay. One other question. Let's say a child, someone is abused, and as time goes on, they need counseling, psychiatric care, and so on. Would that be an example of one denied because of a pre-existing condition, that you couldn't trace it back to an assault?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator. The issue of pre-existing condition is not my area of expertise.
Okay.
We offer a one-time assessment very early on in the initial investigation of alleged abuse or neglect. It is true that many of our children do go on for ongoing services. Much of the time that is covered by insurance. If they don't have insurance or their insurance is inadequate, many times it is supported by the Crime Victims Compensation Fund again. But in terms of pre-existing conditions, I'm afraid I couldn't answer that.
Okay.
Senator Bates.
Just a couple comments that may hopefully shed some light on this. The community assessment centers or regional assessment centers are absolutely vital for this service. Primary care physicians are neither trained or capable of making these assessments, and most emergency room physicians aren't either. There's lots of stuff involved. You've got a child who, usually a child, who has suffered huge trauma physically and mentally. You have to gather data that would be used in court potentially. People who do this have to be specially trained for it. And many people who do this can only do it for a few years. And then they have to retire from it because they can't take the personal trauma for the provider seeing this over and over again. Paying for this has always been a huge problem. And in my area and other areas, different organizations come together trying to give funding to these programs. This is a horrendous job to be done, and you know that to be true. And it's a horrendous job to be done. We are now moving into an era in Oregon when in the next 12 to 14 months, every child will have insurance in this state. It's important that these assessment centers be funded properly so they can continue their vital work for these children. This is often something that happens at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday night. You're trying to move a child into a custody situation where they'll be safe. You have to give them a safe place to stay. And you've got to sit down with this poor child and gather physical and other evidence to prove the case. It is a really difficult thing to do. And so it's important that we fund these and that they don't have to be battling all the time to keep their funding going and close these centers down. We were at risk in Southern Oregon on several occasions in the last 20 years of closing our center down and having these poor kids go to an emergency room seen by a physician who does not feel comfortable doing this, didn't want to do it, and had to go through this process and then had to show up in court 6 months later trying to remember what had happened, what was going on, and not prepared for any of that. So the work they do is really important, and I just can't tell you enough that we need to support these organizations. This is the way to do it. That makes sense?
I was very involved with CARES, and when I worked for Clackamas County, your center was not in existence, and so I only had to make two referrals, but they are very, very fragile cases, and Senator Bates is absolutely right. The ER and a primary care physician is not the place for these children. And these centers are just wonderful. And if anyone has the opportunity to go through, I mean, it is very kid-friendly and the staff is extremely well-trained. So I know that these are vital. What I would like to do, since it's pretty clear what the amendment does, that since the insurers have just received this amendment, I would like to get feedback from them, and so I do plan to move this forward to Thursday. Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you. And my question, Madam Chair, on the amendment, the underlying bill is about sexual violence, and it appears that the A3s deal with any condition, not just sexual violence. So I'd like to get a read on that as well.
LC opinion. Can you follow up on that? Okay, Mr. Bacobian can do that. All right, is there any other discussion or questions?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gretchen Bennett. I'm the Executive Director of Liberty House, your Child Abuse Assessment Center here in Salem, and I want to thank Senator Bates and others for your comments about the work that we do today. I would just echo Tanya's comments. I think she put it succinctly and well. I think there's an inefficiency in going billing and rebilling and rebilling and repackaging the same claim when the services were important and vital to be provided and the child has coverage. So we appreciate your help with this.
All right. Thank you so much for bringing this forward, and thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
It takes very special people to be dealing in this arena. All right. College, any further discussion on this? Thursday is our last meeting. I probably will be talking to you regarding these bills to see where everyone's at. Also, after getting some information, too, from the Insurance Division. With that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3631, and we're adjourned.